You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. You're listening to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for subscribing on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. Bam Adebayo returned to action on Tuesday afternoon, just in time to play in the third and final scrimmage in the Orlando bubble. But it didn't really matter. Even with the All-Star in the lineup, the Heat got routed 128-110 by the Memphis Grizzlies in a purely ugly affair. Started off pretty close. Miami was actually able to build a small lead, but then the Grizzlies caught fire, particularly from the perimeter, and they just stayed inflamed for the rest of the scrimmage. It was, again, a pretty ugly beatdown on Memphis's part there. They just manhandled Miami pretty completely. There was some tension there, perhaps. Obviously, the Grizzlies held somewhat of a grudge against Jay Crowder for having been a former teammate of his. And now, of course, now with the Miami Heat after the midseason acquisition back in February. But Iguodala in particular, Andre Iguodala had refused to report to the Grizzlies because they were, you know, seen as a rebuilding team and spent much of the regular season just practicing on his own. And so I think there was some concern from Ja Morant and a couple others there about Iguodala. None of that really mattered. If there was any tension, I'm not sure how much that fueled them. The Grizzlies didn't indicate that there was any kind of tension, although there was a brief altercation between Jay Crowder and Jonas Valanciunas when Valanciunas actually elbowed Crowder across the face at some point during the game. But if that was tension, if there was extra incentive, I'm not sure it really mattered because there are other pressing concerns there. But the big story of the game, Bam Adebayo's return. He was part of the starting lineup for the first time in a while. And this starting lineup was the one that had been so successful during most of the regular season and the first time they'd been together since early February 3rd, I want to say, when Myers Leonard got hurt and then Jimmy Butler sustained some injuries. And so they were in and out. And of course, the season came to a screeching halt back in mid-March. So for 5 months, this lineup had not been out on the floor together, but Bam helped kind of restore some stability to that starting lineup. He looked overall pretty solid. He spoke after the game and mentioned that he felt good, that he wasn't thrown off by any kind of the strange background noise or scenery or anything like that really didn't impact him. He was just out there hooping. Those were his words. And he did finish with 16 points on 7 of 12 shootings. He looked good early on. He actually put up a nice floater over Valanciunas, running a good pick and roll with Jimmy Butler, who found him in the lane. And then he actually was willing to take a jumper a little bit later on. It was just a nice, solid showing from him, but he did admit to some nerves. He said that he'd need one more game to get back to 100%. Those were, again, his words speaking to media following the loss of the Grizzlies. He wasn't necessarily winded. He wants to get back a little bit closer to where he was before the season came to an end in March, but overall, a solid outing. Now, there were some concerns about his defense. I think that was really my little story of the game, is that the defense continues to be a problem with Miami. After managing to limit a undermanned Sacramento team in their first scrimmage, they were kind of beat a little bit by the Utah Jazz, although they did come back. Utah, not a particularly great shooting team, although Miami did struggle a little bit as far as their perimeter scoring was concerned against the Jazz. Against the Grizzlies, they were just absolutely blown away. And that's a problem because I feel like this is a little reminiscent of what we saw prior to the season coming to an end in March. The Grizzlies are not a good shooting team, particularly from the perimeter. They ranked 20th during the regular season in three-point percentage, about 35%, but somehow managed to knock down 45% of their attempts against the Heat. Not a good look. I'm not sure what the overall issue is. I know the point of attack continues to be a concern. We have some guards in Tyler Herro, Kendrick Nunn, Goran Dragic, even Duncan to some extent, that can't keep guys on the perimeter or can't keep them from driving into the lane and then creating opportunities for themselves or others. And I think that's a big part of it, because then if you have a ball handler crashing into the lane, if he takes a shot attempt, more likely than not, it might get contested, or he might be able to actually get to the rim and get a good percentage shot. If not, he's able to dish it to the perimeter, and that kind of throws the whole defense off, because then they collapse on that ball handler and opens up opportunities on the perimeter. And I think that's a lot of what happened with Memphis. Again, whether they were pissed off at Iguodala or not, none of that seemed to matter. They had wide open looks, and they knocked those down. And that is a big issue for me, is that I just they looked really discombobulated. There was no communication. They said a few players said after the game, Duncan Robinson, Butler, Adebayo, they all mentioned lack of communication, which is very weird because you've got Myers out there who did pick up some ticky-tack fouls against Valanciunas early on, and he's been, of course, as loud a vocal a defender as possible. While he may lack certain things from a physical standpoint, he brings a high IQ. He keeps everybody in line as far as barking out what to do next, where people are going, as far as where the ball handler is, etc., when screens, calling those out. That kind of communication is key to a successful defense. Miami did not have it against the Grizzlies. They looked bad. There were a number of wide open shots. You saw guys just kind of looking around as somebody would drive the lane. Even Adebayo, who is an all-world defender, just did not look very solid there. And I think that's a big issue for Miami moving forward, because they're just a few days away from their first game of the season, or the restart, of course. The eight seeding games start off on Saturday, the first game of which is against the Denver Nuggets, and they're a dangerous scoring team. So it's a huge concern. I don't know how else to put it. They did not look good against the Grizzlies. I'm not sure what they can tweak from here to there until the first game against the Nuggets. So it might just be part of who this team is. I think everybody kind of expects Eric Spoelstra to pull a theoretical rabbit out of their hat against opposing teams. But I'm just not sure if this team is built that way. I'm not sure if, particularly because of the guards situation, that they have a handle on being able to limit shot creators and ball handlers out the perimeter, and that, again, creates opportunities for others. Now, additional takeaways from the game. Jimmy looks great. I have to say, I am a little surprised, again, because he did have some nagging injuries throughout most of the season, but he's been really solid. He took the second game off against the Jazz. He looked really, really solid against Memphis. Played 22 minutes, started the second half, and of course the first half as well, but he finished 4 of 5 from the line, got to the free throw line 9 of 10 times. He was fantastic. Finished with 18 points, also had 7 assists, 2 rebounds, 5 turnovers. A little shaky as far as the ball handling is concerned, but I think a lot of that had to do with timing as you incorporate Kendrick into just his second game, Bam into his first game, Meyer still kind of learning how to kind of play alongside everybody. I think there were some issues there as far as the chemistry is concerned, but overall, really, really solid game. He looked agile. He looked healthy. He looked explosive. He caught a lob or finished a rebound, perhaps, that was caroming after rim and was able to finish it strongly for a dunk. Just looked really, really good. If there were any kind of injury concerns, at least for me, there were. They didn't seem to be pretty apparent over the last three games of the scrimmage, and I think that was further emphasized in the loss to the Grizzlies. Derek Jones Jr. looks like the odd man out. I'm not sure what Spoelstra's lineup is going to be like once games actually start in earnest, but he seems to be a little bit more confident going with Jay Crowder, going with Andre Iguodala, who's a much more experienced player. Goran Dragic, obviously, is near and dear to Spoelstra's heart. That's already going pretty deep. You want to be able to get an offensive player like Tyler Herro on the floor, and of course Kelly Olynyk being the only actual other center other than Adebayo who can take some minutes away from Myers Leonard when he gets in foul trouble like he did today. So there aren't a lot of options there, and of course that just leaves Derek Jones Jr. out. He did not play a lot, 13 minutes overall, finished with 6 points, 1-1 from the floor, also finished with 6 free throw attempts, of which he knocked down 4, so not a bad game from him. I feel like he's more of a break glass in case of emergency kind of weapon. I'm not sure if he fits in necessarily. He has to have just a right matchup, particularly from a defensive standpoint, to be able to make an impact. And so that's a concern. But right now, it just doesn't look like he's going to be able to carve out any kind of playing time against the other wing players on this team just because of his struggling offense. Myers was an issue, too. He struggled against Valanciunas, who finished with 15 points and 15 rebounds. Just Valanciunas has been able to space out the floor a little bit as his career has progressed. He shoots a lot from the perimeter more than he did earlier on in his career, and he looked really good. He's a physical presence inside. He still gets to the paint whenever he wants. A lot of that is clearing out space with those long arms and elbows of his. He caught Crowder with an elbow. He caught Myers with an elbow. I feel like that's a big part of his offensive repertoire, is just clearing out space that way and just kind of throwing his arms up and saying, what foul? He's a burly presence. I'm glad we don't have to face the Grizzlies again during the eight seeding games, because it was not an ideal matchup for Miami, and Valanciunas is somewhat problematic as a big who can space the floor. Something to look out for when Nikola Jokic faces Miami on Saturday too. So that's all I've got on the game itself. Again, just an ugly affair, not very consistent, some key issues there that I think we started to see signs of cropping up over the last couple games, and might be there when the eight regular season games, seeding season games start on Saturday. So best forgotten, and hopeful that you can just say, well, you know, everybody was a little clunky, a little rusty, and once the lineup gets a little bit more practice, once Kendrick and Bam start to get a little bit more comfortable, they'll be able to bounce back a little bit more. But can we count on Tyler Hero to be a consistent scorer when the season restarts? I'll answer that in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Start your morning with the news that matters in just 10 minutes. Axio Today host Nyla Boodoo and a team of award-winning journalists will bring you the latest analysis and insight into the trends shaping our world. Say it with me now. Sports are back, baby. I've been waiting for this day since March, and now that it's here, I've only got one thing on my mind, and that's my bookie. My bookie's a home run, a slam dunk, a triple overtime game-winning shot, all wrapped into one. I love it. You love it. And that should be all you need to hear in order to start betting today. My bookie has up-to-the-minute odds on all your favorite teams, and with the potential start of Major League Baseball just around the corner, there's never been a better time to start playing. My bookie. It's easy. You bet. You win. They pay. If you're feeling good about your team's chances this year, be sure to check out my bookie's World Series future bet. Nothing shows your belief in your squad like betting on them before the season's even begun. But why stop with baseball? Smart bettors are always looking towards the future, and in this case that means basketball, hockey, football, potentially. MyBookie is already accepting bets in all your favorite NBA, NHL, and NFL games. There's never been a better time to start exploring the world of online sports betting, and if you join today, MyBookie will match your deposit 100%, plus they'll toss you a free $10 MLB future wager. All you got to do is enter the promo code LOCKEDONNBA when signing up. So make sure you use that promo code LOCKEDONNBA when signing up at MyBookie. The terms are simple. You bet, you win, they pay. Just a reminder to listen, subscribe, and leave a review whenever possible on your favorite app to listen to podcasts, so that you always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. Over the weekend against the Jazz, Tyler Hero had a phenomenal game. 20 points, 8 of 16 from the floor, 3 of 4 from the line. Really, really solid outing from him. And I think there was a lot of buzz generated by that performance. It seemed like the Hero that we'd seen intermittently over the course of the season, aggressive, cocky, confident. He's still a rookie, but he's gone through a lot. The season has been a very difficult one for everybody associated with the NBA, and I think Hero looked pretty polished, going at Rudy Gobert, a Defensive Player of the Year candidate and a past two-time Defensive Player of the Year winner. And I think a lot of people were encouraged to see Hero's performance, and they kind of thought of him maybe as being potentially one of the stalwarts on his team who could help carry this team to a couple of victories during the eight seeding games and, of course, during the playoffs. But on Tuesday, Hero and perhaps all of our hopes were brought down to earth against Memphis. He played 26 minutes off the bench and had just 8 points, going 3 of 13 from the floor. Some of those were open looks, some of them were not, some of them were contested shots. Bad outing for Hero. I'm not sure what to make of Hero. I feel like I am the lone person who is somewhat resistant to crown Hero as a future superstar in this league. If you heard an episode from me earlier this weekend with my former co-host Wes Goldberg, he talked about Hero, made a comparison to Kawhi Leonard, which might have seemed a little off base in that it wasn't necessarily about the same kind of physical type or anything like that, but just that they play at their own pace, that they're comfortable doing what they do, and they don't try to necessarily change things around, and they just impact the game that way. I wasn't too sold on the comparison. I like Wes's line of thinking. I often agree with everything that he says about basketball, but I was a little hesitant to buy into it myself. The thing is with Hero, I think, is he's still so unpolished in every other aspect of his game that if his shot isn't falling, he is not much of a factor. He is, to some extent, very similar to Kendrick Nunn. Different styles of scoring. I think Hero's a little bit better off the bounce. I think he's not much of a catch-and-shoot player. I think Kendrick is a little bit better on catch-and-shoot numbers. I have to go and take a deeper look into those. But I think Hero can create his shot for himself, and he's a more and better and more willing playmaker for others than Kendrick Nunn is. That might be more just indicative of the fact that Kendrick is not necessarily a ball hog, but he's just not geared to pass the ball up. He's a guy who's a bulldog. He's going to score. That's his first approach to the basket, is to try and find a way to knock that shot in, even if it's contested. We've seen him make these shots over the course of the season, so I think that's just who he is right now. But my comparison to Nunn is based on the fact that they can both be very limited, because both of them are first and foremost scorers. And then if everything else isn't working, and if that shot isn't falling, then they're rendered kind of useless. They're not very good defenders. I can't say which one of them is a better defender. I know there was some debate on Heat Twitter during the game as to who was the better perimeter defender among the two. I've seen Hero play the passing lanes pretty well. He's a little bit worse on the ball than Kendrick Nunn is, who's a little bit more physical, stronger, I think, and a little bit more willing to kind of mix it up in there. Both of them can be a little distracted on defense. They can take themselves out of a play, and that kind of leads to an open shot for somebody, particularly from the perimeter. And again, with that point of emphasis as far as the perimeter defense, the point of attack being such a huge concern for Miami moving forward, I'm a little concerned, because we just don't have any legitimate options. I like, of the three guards that we have who are the primary guard ball handlers, Kendrick, Goran, and Hero. You know, they're all different in their own ways. I know that Goran's going to do what he does. His defense has been a little problematic this season because of his age and limited flexibility. But that's not the excuse for Hero or Nunn. They're both young. They're both somewhat more agile than Goran might have ever been. And yet they don't seem to have the kind of tenacity, the mentality to focus on defense and making sure that they limit whoever has the ball. They make good plays on occasion. I can't take that away from them 100%, but I do have concerns about whether or not Tyler can step up. And if right now you're looking at a guy who's just a really damn good scorer, when that shot is falling, he's really nifty. I appreciate Tyler's game. He has some really nice ball handling skills that I think a lot of people did not consider when he was getting into the league. For sure, he's got that confidence factor. That is undeniable. He wants the ball in his hands in clutch situations. He's made the most of it during limited opportunities, and I think he'll continue to get those opportunities even once the season restarts in a couple days. But if that shot isn't falling, as it wasn't against the Grizzlies, playing 26 minutes and knocking down just 8 points and not making any kind of an impact elsewhere, and in fact letting Ja Morant to kind of just run roughshod and get to his spots and do whatever he needed to do to let Dylan Brooks get his shot going, just everybody on the Memphis Grizzlies side looked so damn good against Miami. And I think a lot of that has to do with the defensive issues here. That's the problem, is that, the defense is continuing to allow open looks for opposing ball handlers. And if that's the case, a lot of that falls on the ball handlers that Miami has, the guards that they have who are currently in there. And so I'm not confident that you can go to Hero consistently. I think you have to be... You don't want to break his confidence. You don't want to, ruin the kind of things that he's been able to accomplish over the course of the season. But at the same time, with the added stakes of the playoffs and with my original concerns that Miami was perhaps putting a little bit too much faith in young players that have not experienced the tenacity and intensity of a playoff situation, I'm just not sure what to get out of Tyler Hero. That's just my issue, is I'm just not sure what to make of him. And I, while everybody wants to crown him a superstar, I don't know that he's ever going to get there. I really don't. He's very young. We don't know how a player can progress. I know it seems perhaps pretty simple to say, oh, he's never going to take a leap. That's not what I'm saying. I just don't know if I can see it just yet. He has to and continue to develop the other sides of his game. Now, Iguodala and other players have spoken about his work, his willingness to do the work, and that's a step in the right direction. He hopefully can prove me wrong. Just right now, he's not a consistent threat, and if he's not on offense, then I don't know what you're going to have him out there for, because I think it's time to make a change. Something I'll get into the next segment when I talk about the biggest takeaways from Miami's three scrimmage performances. Again, Hero is a very solid player. I like his flash. I like his style. I like the things that he does offensively when that shot is falling. But if it's not, then he could be a liability for this team, and there are just too many holes defensively and too many lacks. There's too much of a lack of a two-way player from the guard position right now that you have to consistently go to a rookie or two rookies to be out there on the floor taking up shots that might not be falling. So something for Eric Spoelstra to consider. I'll get back to finishing off my recap and talk about what we've learned during the scrimmage games next. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Some basic takeaways from the past three scrimmages. Again, they were able to beat the Kings pretty well in their first scrimmage, and they had an even match against the Jazz that kind of got bogged down with some pretty solid defense from both teams. And then just an absolute blowout. It did not even look as close as that final score would indicate. And so it's kind of hard with Bam out, but I think this is just a reality. The term new normal has been applied to so many different things during this pandemic, and I think it's going to apply to this too, that you're not quite sure what to get from one team to the next, because I think every team is going to be dealing with some sort of instability at some point. You're either going to have a player who is forced into quarantine or might go through a nagging injury. You're going to have guys that are just starting to get back and starting to reincorporate themselves. Look at Zion Williamson. He was there for camp early on. He reports, then he has to go away for deal with a personal situation. He comes back, has to go through quarantine, and now he can finally get back on the floor again. So it's just going to be up and down. It's going to be very difficult for any team to establish and maintain stability for a prolonged period of time. But none of that helps Miami, who continues to have issues defensively. So that is their focus. They have to tighten it up. Otherwise, any kind of hope of making a deep playoff run is out the door. And for all my pessimism, at least that could be some way of interpreting it, I'm not pessimistic about this team. I still like their chances. I've seen too much of their chemistry. I've seen too many games where they just look amazing and share the ball and do so many things so well for me to kind of discount that. And even while you may think that Boston or Toronto or Milwaukee certainly might have more top-end talent than Miami, I still like Miami's chances. In a recent discussion from other Locked On NBA hosts about what Miami's chances might be, I actually mentioned that I think that their ceiling this season is an Eastern Conference Finals berth, even if they have to go through Milwaukee to do it, because I think they have the roster, the mentality, the coaching, and everything else to make that a reality, but not if their defense is falling apart. And so that's going to be their focus moving forward. We'll have to wait and see what Eric Spoelstra can do. But I also wanted to say that Duncan Robinson has emerged as probably the team's third most important player. I think you obviously give Jimmy and Bam, they are the two straws that stir this respective drink, but when it comes to Duncan Robinson, he's going to make everything different for Miami. I want to label him the X factor. I think it's fair to conclude that that's the reality, just because his gravity is so intense. From a ball handling perspective, if he gets the ball in his hands, he's gonna draw two or three shooters. He's constantly running off screens to throw off defenses, and with that in mind, he can be such a huge factor for Miami, which is why I think he's the team's third most important player. You're going to get some scoring from either Hero, Dragic, or none at some point. Maybe you'll get scoring from all three. Maybe you'll get scoring from two at a time. Maybe just one at a time. Unfortunately, there's also a possibility that all three might be off for whatever reason, but that's an issue for another day. For now, though, Duncan Robinson may not always get his shots off. It looks like that shot is falling. He's confident, and again, he's looked really, really solid in all three games during the Orlando bubble. Or scrimmages, rather. But even if that shot isn't falling, and that is a concern, a lot of people will tell you that defenses will certainly find a way to key in on Duncan and limit him coming off of screens and things of that sort. I think there's a little bit more passing and playmaking to his game that a lot of people consider. And if that's the case, he can make opportunities for others because of that gravity, because of the fact that he's going to draw defenses towards him, even if that shot's not falling. You have to respect it. I think there's too much there, too much of a body of work from him this season to respect that it's going to change how defenses approach him. And they're going to key in on him regardless, just because, he looks amazing. Like, really, he pulled up from 30 feet against the Grizzlies and just didn't seem to sweat it whatsoever. The range for him is nearing unlimited. He's not quite Steph Curry yet. I don't think we'll ever see anybody like that. He might not even be Dame Lillard, but he's a pretty damn good shooter, and defenses certainly take that into consideration. I still think Eric Spoelstra goes to a deep rotation for the eight seeding games, too. So I think that's something else to continue to look out for. Again, the scrimmages have been inconsistent as far as rosters are concerned. Jimmy and Goran only play the first half of scrimmage one. Jimmy didn't play in scrimmage two. Bam wasn't available. Kendrick was. Now you get that starting lineup that had been so successful earlier in the regular season for the scrimmage three. And you start to see whether or not Derrick Jones Jr. or Jay Crowder or Kelly Olynyk and whose minutes are going to get cut, because one of those players, if not several of them, are going to have their minutes cut. We've seen Eric Spoelstra go nine deep at most during the playoffs, tighten it pretty substantially, and that was not the case against the Grizzlies, even when that rotation was, you know, back in effect for the first time in 5 months. You know, he went with, 11 players that played 14 minutes or more. Myers only played 11 minutes because he went into foul trouble. So maybe that changes somewhat, but he went pretty deep into that rotation. Again, where do you take the minutes from? Where do you keep the minutes from? Myers, I could see getting to similar situations where if he's not in foul trouble and he's not making an impact offensively, even though he did go 2-of-4 against the Grizzlies, I could see him playing just at the start of first quarters, just at the start of third quarters, similar to what we saw during the regular season. Kelly Olynyk's going to be out there if that shot's falling. He's able to make impact offensively. If he's not getting torched defensively and he has a favorable matchup, he's going to get some playing time. So that center combination there, again, we're going to see that for a lot of the time to start games, to fill in the gap here, probably not a closing lineup. That closing lineup is going to involve Bam Adebayo at center and then either a Derek Jones Jr., a Crowder, an Iguodala, probably an Iguodala, to get some of that playing time. So that rotation is still going to be pretty deep, even if it's just going to be limited as far as some players like Myers, like Olynyk, getting some minutes, not a whole heck of a lot of minutes. I still think Derek Jones Jr. might be the guy out because he's just – there's not much you can do with him. His offense is still so shaky, and while he's a lob threat and a good rebounder because of his length and a solid defender overall, I remain convinced that he is somewhat limited in his development. He's taken a huge leap since coming from the Phoenix Suns. That's without a doubt. But I'm still reluctant to say that he is going to be the savior that a lot of people envision him. And that's not to say that you don't like Derek or that I don't like Derek or anything like that. It's just, I just can't count on him being a consistent player out there. And if that's the case, then I'm not so sure why Eric Spoelstra would continue giving him a lot of playing time. You take a chance that maybe their confidence will be remain intact and that they can still find a way to make an impact in future games. But if you've got a bad situation and Derek's shot isn't falling and he's not making any kind of a place for others, then what are you going to have him out there for? The occasional long defense or maybe to intercept a pass here and there, to block an inbounds pass? Yeah, and those things are all great. But Iguodala can probably do that too. Crowder can certainly do that as well. Even Duncan can probably do that to some effect. Additionally, I'm starting to think that Spo just needs to change his starting five. I think a lot of this has to do with, you know, my concerns about the defense. And if you're going out there with a Kendrick, with a Tyler, with a, you know, a Goron, they all share some issues defensively. And if that's the case, then I think it's time to change the lineup up and go with Jimmy as your primary ball handler, as he often is anyway. You got Duncan out there ostensibly as another two or three, a wing scorer. That's really what he is, and a versatile defender. And then if you have to put another guy out there to play some defense and who can space the floor, I think Jake Crowder gets the starting nod, to be honest with you. I think that would be, to me, the ideal starting five, because you get Crowder out there who is basically a catch-and-shoot player or who can drive to the rim on occasion. Kendrick probably creates more opportunities offensively and can, you know, use that dribble step to get to the 18-19 footer. Not an ideal shot. So if you're going to lose somewhat if you're going to lose something defensively by having Kendrick out there, why not just replace him with a guy, a wing player who can do much more, who can be a little bit better of a floor spacer, and or not necessarily better as a floor spacer, but can also provide some floor spacing and won't give up as much defensively. You're going to have Jimmy defending your primary ball handler, your opponent's primary ball handler. I think that's the reality. Duncan's going to be out there. Jay can guard twos, threes, occasionally switch onto point guards. I think that's fine. I like his chances against opposing point guards a lot more than I like Kendrick Nunn's. And if that's the case, I think you start him and you keep Myers and Bam out there as well. And if that changes the things that you do defensively, as far as your second unit is concerned, you still have options. You can stagger rotations. You can bring Goron in there for Crowder later on. You save him. You bring him off the bench later on down the game when you bring Kendrick or Tyler back into the lineup. You make some changes here. Iguodala is a guy that you can utilize in a number of different ways. He can be your four, your three. You have Olynyk out there. You don't have to give up as much. And I think you can start off a little bit more effectively than what we've seen. I think you need that kind of boost offensively. If you're going to give up the kind of points that you did today in the first quarter, you're going to get blown out a lot. You don't want to rely on having to come back each and every time, which is what Miami's MO has been during this defensive lapses that have been there for the past few months, obviously stretching back to when the season was in full effect. So that's my recommendation. That's what I've seen so far. If I were Spoelstra, I'd start to consider the possibility of benching Kendrick Nunn for somebody else. Not a knock on Kendrick, just an overall analysis of his limitations defensively, and that maybe it might be better. The team might be better suited by going with somebody else who can defend at the point of attack, and I think Crowder is that guy. Coming up later this week, I'll continue to bring you the latest info on what's going on in Orlando and around the NBA. Be sure to subscribe and follow this podcast right now on your favorite podcast app, and you'll get the latest episode of Locked On Heat as soon as it's out. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your support. Yeah! Wrap it up, D.